Its current state here on 90.5 WKAR. I'm Mark Bayshore. At the end of each month, we check in with Great Lakes commentator and journalist Gary Wilson for updates on environmental stories from around the Great Lakes Basin. This month, we get an update on a proposed nuclear waste storage facility in Ontario, the recent report on Michigan oil pipelines from a state task force, and this year's algae bloom outlook on Lake Erie. Welcome back, Gary.
Hey, Mark. Good morning.
Let's start with a topic that's getting a lot more attention actually across the border in Canada. Some here, but more there. A federal review panel in Canada earlier this year gave the okay to a nuclear waste storage facility near Lake Huron. There's been significant opposition to that decision, both in Canada and here in the United States. What's the latest on this, Gary?
Well, Mark, when you put nuclear waste and Great Lakes in the same sentence, you automatically have a hot-button issue. The selection of this storage site has been working its way through the approval process for 4 years at least, and it's close to a final decision, as was indicated by the review panel's approval that you mentioned in your introduction. The next step is it goes to Canada's Environment Minister, Leona Aglukkaq, for her approval, and she was set to make her decision by September the 2nd or so. But just last week, she announced that she was pushing it back for a few months. That, coincidentally or not, puts it after the Canadian federal elections, which are in October. Therefore, it's conveniently passed, takes it, the decision past the federal election campaign, out of the federal election campaign debate. Now, before we get all righteous on this side of the border, that's not an unusual tactic for politicians of all stripes. You know, here we just have to think of the Keystone XL pipeline and where that decision was a political football that had been repeatedly kicked down the road. So that's where they are right now.
As I understand it, this is considered low-level nuclear waste. They won't be burying spent fuel rods, but rather equipment used in the Bruce Power Plant. Has the scientific community weighed in on what risk it poses to siting the storage facility so close to Lake Huron? What do the scientists say?
Well, the we'll get to Ohio later. Ontario Power Generation, the company that's hosting the site, the waste, says that over 12,500 pages of peer-reviewed scientific analysis was submitted to support the decision. Now, of course, there are others that that would question some of the findings there, but 12,500 pages is quite a bit of analysis. In addition to that, the city of Kincardine, where the site will be located, it wants the facility because of the revenue and the jobs that it'll bring and sustain over a long period of time. So right now, those are powerful arguments for the site, and I think they'll be difficult to overcome.
What have the environmental groups in Canada, for starters, what have they been saying?
Well, predictably, the Canadian environmental groups are against this site, especially since it's within a mile of Lake Huron. No surprise there. One example is the group called Stop the Great Lakes Nuclear Dump. It's had an active campaign, which includes a lot of billboards that say, and I'm quoting now, would you store poison next to your well? They're doing that in an effort to try to personalize and localize the issue. Storage of environmental or nuclear waste can be rather abstract. That group also cites 163 resolutions against the location of the site by communities in the and throughout the Great Lakes region, including many in Michigan. I believe Oakland County was one of the more recent locations to sign on to the resolution. So Canadian environmental groups are in full campaign mode.
Our U.S. senators from Michigan, Debbie Stabenow and Gary Peters, have both weighed in on the issue. Talk to us about their comments, their concerns, and maybe you can help us understand whether Michigan or our federal government has any real authority when it comes to this decision going on in Canada.
Sure. I would say with Senators Stabenow and Peters and also Representatives Candace Miller and Dan, Mr. Candy, I'm locking on his first name right now, Kildee. They're kind of in using the NIMBY, the familiar NIMBY acronym, you know, not in my backyard.
Right.
They're objecting to the site's proximity to Lake Huron and therefore Michigan's eastern shore of Lake Huron. I'd also add that the region's mayor's organization, the Great Lakes and St. Lawrence Cities Initiative, has expressed an official concern about the site, but they haven't taken a formal position. The two organizations that represent Great Lakes governors both told me this week that they will not take a position. That's not necessarily a surprise, but curious. You'd think the governors would have at least something to say about nuclear waste storage on the shores of Lake Huron, since everybody else does. And I did reach out to Governor Snyder's office last week for a comment and did not get a response. Regarding the second part of your question, what leverage does the United States really have? And the short answer is not a lot. There is a mechanism whereby Secretary of State John Kerry could ask his Canadian counterpart to initiate a review under provisions of the Trans-Boundary Water Treaty, and requests have been made of him by a number of people to do that. But I think that's just a long shot at this late date in the process.
Gary Wilson is a Great Lakes environmental journalist and commentator. We're talking about July's biggest environmental stories. Let's move on to some Great Lakes news that's been making waves more on this side of the border. The Michigan's Petroleum Pipeline Task Force recently released its long-anticipated report on oil pipelines in our state. I talked to Department of Environmental Quality Director Dan Wyant on this program a couple of weeks ago. During that conversation, Mr. Wyant addressed the state's plan for dealing with the 60-year-old Mackinac Straits pipelines. Let's listen to what he said.
61 years, that pipeline has operated without incident. In fairness, the public wants to know what's the lifespan of that, and is it properly regulated, and do we have controls in place, and could we monitor and control and react to an issue if it occurred? Because we had one, and it was a big one, and are we better prepared today than we were yesterday? And I think the answer to that is yes.
What do you think, Gary? Is Michigan, in fact, better prepared for an oil spill than it was before the Kalamazoo River spill in 2010?
Well, I think it's hard to know. The Coast Guard had previously said that they aren't prepared for a spill in the Straits. And the Straits of Mackinac aren't the Kalamazoo River. They span two Great Lakes, which have divergent currents, shifting winds, and cover a far greater expanse. But I suspect Mr. Wyant has to say that to reassure. And if I was in his official position, I would probably do the same. But I think the most troubling part of that answer is that it emphasizes the reactive versus the preventive. While it's important to react to a pipeline rupture, I think Michigan's emphasis should really be on prevention of another incident. And that constant repetition that I've heard over a couple of years now about the pipeline has worked for 60-plus years, that just rings hollow at this point. This issue has been in the spotlight for 2 years, and you know, so far all we have is a study.
Finally, it's been almost a year, Gary, since the city of Toledo shut down its water system after cyanobacteria, more commonly known as toxic algae blooms, got into its intake systems in Lake Erie. What is the algae bloom outlook for the lake this summer?
Well, the forecast originally was for a season of moderate algae blooms, but that changed, and it's changed quickly. In the past number of weeks, that area has had very heavy rains and significant flooding. That's the western Lake Erie Basin, which includes Toledo. And that has caused experts to significantly revise their forecasts, and they're now predicting significant algae bloom season.
We'll point out that just last night, the mayor of Toledo raised the city's water quality status from clear to watch, and this was after the city found microcystin, this dangerous toxin that shut down the city's water system last year, near the water intake mechanisms in Lake Erie. Any response to that development, Gary?
Well, it's serious enough. The incident was serious enough for the mayor to hold a 9 p.m. press conference last night to alert everyone to the change in the warning status. and also to tell Toledo citizens that the water is being treated and is safe. I suspect after last year they're probably trying to err on the side of over-communication, but let's think about that for a second. It kind of reminded me of the old town crier who used to go around pronouncing all as well. Do Lake Erie residents now have to be told their drinking water is safe during the summer months instead of automatically being able to assume that it is? At least last night they did.
We've been talking about July's biggest environmental stories with Gary Wilson, Great Lakes commentator and journalist. Always a pleasure, Gary. Thanks for joining us.
Good to be with you. Talk to you next month.
And this segment is supported by Michigan State University's Knight Center for Environmental Journalism. More news about the Great Lakes environment can be found at greatlakesecho.org and on Current State every Tuesday as part of our partnership.